Approval of the minutes, we have a motion, but no second.
I just ordered them to stand approved, I didn't even call for a motion.
But the motion passed unanimously.
Well, then. What do you want, a retroactive, are you willing to live with this injustice?
Oh, I'm willing to live with that.
Injustice, okay.
It was just a motion, no second, but the motion passed.
It's a good point. You'll make the, without objection, then we'll make the change of date correction. Anybody else have anything they want to say about the minutes or correct or change the minutes? Okay, then the minutes will stand approved with that one change.
I'll second that motion.
It's not a motion. I see, very, the only thing I can get away with being a dictator about. I've been trying to be a dictator and you guys haven't let me, and it's a one little tiny area, God. We're going to talk about the recommendations that people may have, but with regard to stormwater in each of the other areas, the suggestion was made that what we do is have a chapter, stormwater chapter, with a narrative explaining history, current condition, recommendations, or how the staff sees the future of it, you know, the current reality of it, and then the recommendations and what action we took on it. How does everybody like that format? Okay. And what we'll need in each of the areas is somebody who will agree to write the narrative. Who's willing to, and that I want the narrative to be objective and not going to whether you like or don't like any given aspect, but an objective view of the utility, the history, the current status, and the proposed conditions. And I'm sure the staff will help you with history and anything else that you need. Who would like to undertake to write the one about stormwater? I don't want to do a committee because writing something with a committee is crazy. You know, one person writes it.
So this would have nothing to do with the recommendations, just the...
Yeah, just the explanation of the condition, and then we'll get into the recommendations as the second part. Does that make sense?
What would be the point? Would we add this prior to a recommendation?
Or? Yeah, we'd have the narrative, and then we'd have...
Like that would just kind of preface or frame where our recommendations are coming from?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's kind of a summary of the presentation that the staff made, kind of, for the document. Certainly not more than 2 pages.
I would sense that it gives us the basis of why we listed these recommendations, more than just a list of recommendations.
What was identified as
the challenges and constraints that drove us to these recommendations.
Right, so they don't just have the appearance that they dropped out of the sky. So who will write stormwater?
Could we, instead of going in that way, go work backwards from our recommendations as to why that recommendation was made? Or what prompted that, or you know what I mean? I just wonder if that would be easier?
Yeah, you mean do the recommendations first and then write the narrative after you have the recommendations?
Yeah, so someone doesn't say, well, what are they suggesting that for?
You know? Yeah, I don't mean there any timing in which it's got to be written. I would wait till I had the recommendations to write the narrative too. But the question is, who will write it?
And this would be, I mean, I don't have a problem doing it. I just wouldn't be able to do it like this next week or two.
No hurry.
Yeah, then
will
I
you
then
do
I,
stormwater?
Then I can do it, yeah.
Cool. All right.
I'd have one comment.
Yes.
The way I recall the staff presentation, I don't 100% see a connection between the staff presentation and the recommendations. The recommendations were generated independently of the presentation.
Well, the recommendations that Bill made some of them I agree with you on, but I don't think we're limited to making recommendations based on what the staff told us. I think we can make, you can get recommendations from, like, recommendations that you get from talking to citizens or from your own independent evaluation or whatever. I agree with you that the recommendations aren't all prompted by the staff discussion, but how does that change anything?
Yeah, I'd see the staff presentation would only be a means to script the introduction to give a state of affairs or state of the utility, and then the recommendations came out more spontaneously from the members' task force.
Okay.
So you ready, Cody?
I will look at the recommendations, but that won't necessarily frame or dictate how I summarize the presentation and the staff information.
The way I perceive it to be like a standalone document, so if someone just picked it up and didn't have all the history that we have or we read, could realize here's the challenges, and this committee came up with these list of recommendations and suggestions. That's my thing.
Yeah, because the staff presentation didn't get into too much discussion of billing, although we from by their initiative, but we did talk about it and they did respond to questions about it. So it was involved there. Okay. So Cody's gonna write the narrative portion, but he's gonna wait till the recommendations are done to do it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll.
And there's
I mean,
no
I can
hurt.
Start and come up with something that.
Sure, and then everybody
at.
Can.
Yeah.
Can criticize your.
Yeah.
And
say what
point
I
out what a dummy you are. That's right. Exactly. That's our purpose here.
Okay.
Let's think. Who has specific I know we all know that Bill has some specific recommendations to make. Does anybody else have any specific recommendations they want to make?
This is not necessarily a recommendation, but it probably should have been done earlier on. We need to have some sense of what the service area is. I don't think we've defined where we're working from in terms of a service area as to is it the service area that's defined? Well, could it be is it the city limits? Is it the service area defined by Columbia Imagined? Or what is the service area?
Or is it just downtown?
Isn't the stormwater utility different than, for instance, street or electricity in that it is contiguous with the boundaries of the city of Columbia? And is your question that what's the area that stormwater covers, or is it how many square feet there are of impervious surface?
No, it's not that. It's,
okay.
It's in the general sense of what in the utilities of the city, what is the service area that we that we cover or are dictated by as to jurisdiction or
it's the city limits.
Yeah, in the stormwater world, it's the city limits.
Yes,
that's different with streets, it's different with electricity. Well, because the state roads.
Right. So we if the service area will change dependent on the utility we're talking about, then for each one, we need to define what the service area is.
I agree with that 100%.
So then, Cody, then the service areas, I think we need to say the city limits.
Yeah. I agree.
All right.
With roads, isn't it city limits, but with consideration for the fact that some are state roads and maintained by the states? For water, I mean, for water, it's city limits, except some is water district. Or what?
Yeah, no, we have water service territories outside the city limits, yeah. And we have areas that we don't serve in. I mean, they're just...
The areas you don't serve in the city are water district areas, aren't they? That's what...
But either water or electric are lined up with the city limits.
No, because electric is REC in some cases.
Right, we have a service...
How about the sewer?
Agreement. Sewer serves properties both inside and outside the city.
And does it serve all the property in the city?
No, sir.
Some of it is sewer district, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we have to be prepared to define those, what the area of responsibility is then. Is this where you're going, isn't it?
That's correct.
All right. Is there any problem with doing that? It's probably a pretty good idea so people understand that there's all these intergovernmental agreements and relationships. And with at least with street, you may want to talk about county, too. Scott Boulevard. Scott Boulevard's half city and half county, or in some places?
Half in some areas.
Right. Okay, well then I think it's good to say that.
Sorry, my name is open jurisdiction as well. State and city have county.
Yes, but that's in the third ward, and we don't care.
Those in the third ward know that.
Okay, I have one that I don't know if it's a recommendation or not, but I believe, and this is just me talking, that we ought to fix the problem on Hagen. And because it's been there for a long time, and the city's been talking about it for a long time, and it's probably really, really hard to fix. I'm thinking because it's so flat, and it may mean lots and lots of ancillary problems that I don't even get. You know, and I'm sure you guys are aware of it, but for whatever it's worth, I'd like to know if we can fix it and what to take to fix it, and whether, I don't know whether you should put it in here or not, but it has been hanging around a long time. Maybe you can give us, I'm going to ask you to do this on a couple. Maybe you can give us a little information on what it would take to fix the Agin problem.
Or provide at least their top 5 to 10 projects that need the most focus. Is that?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of that one, and maybe only because we squeaky wheel, you know. But the fact is, it's there. It's been there a long time. Everybody knows it's been there a long time. We ought to try to. And I'd like to at least know if we can fix it.
What's your definition of fix? Can I make it better? Sure. Fixing it requires removal of houses.
Okay, I think it's fair then to say that. Because, I mean, when you got stormwater backing up into people's basements, that's an issue. And, you know, and it's terrible because it's one of the few areas that is so flat, and I'm sure it's technically very difficult. But I would like to know what it would take to.
And we have had to take houses before to fix problems like this.
I get it. And then the council can pray about how they want to deal with that.
Chris?
Yes, sir.
If the city developed a rating system to prioritize.
Say again, Bill?
If the city developed a rating system to prioritize repairs, wouldn't that take care of the problem?
I think that's a good thing, but...
That project should come to the top.
It should.
Just based on longevity.
Near the top.
Yeah, you know, and they could say, you know, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if they were to say, you know, Chris, you're right, Agin's really serious, and it's our 27th most serious problem, or whatever it is, you know, because that's possible. That although we're aware of it, I'm aware of it, doesn't mean that there's not a lot that are more serious that I'm not aware of. That's possible, too. Okay, I'm going to go to Bill, Not yet, but I want to know, does anybody else have any recommendations they want to make specifically?
A procedural recommendation.
Yes, sir.
Is that we've got a number of recommendations that are summarized together that were put together by Carol, and then Bill's brought some additional items. And to me, to make sure we get a fair representation of all the recommendations would be to put them all in one document and number them, and then every member rank them in their order of importance, and then summarize all that so we have a group consensus on what are the most important items, what are the least important items, and then we can decide what needs to be truncated, what should be kept, what should be emphasized more. I mean, we need some methodology to bring all these recommendations in one succinct document. Otherwise, it's going to be a long list of, you know, miscellaneous recommendations without any kind of consensus on priority.
Yeah, I think the idea of some we may not want to do.
Correct.
But the ones that we want to do, do we want to do them all the same? Is your point, right?
Well, I think if everyone has a vote, not necessarily a vote, but an opportunity to rank all the listed recommendations that have been brought together by the group, and then you weight all those together with all voting members, then you're going to end up with a consensus of the group. What's the most important priority? Was second, third, fourth, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so the council has that thinking. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, we may be able to do it today, but I think we could break that out and create a spreadsheet and everybody rank them and move on.
Some of them may not make it past, a majority of us don't want them to be recommendations at all.
Correct.
But among the ones that we do want to be recommendations, then rate those?
Yes.
Yes?
I have opportunity to comment on each one. Like, I have small comments about quite
sure.
a few of them, but...
Sure. Okay, now, then my inclination is to start our list with Bill 6. Where's the document that has the other ones in it?
It was sent by email.
Yeah, it's...
October 16th.
Okay.
And there is, you know, just glancing through, there is some similarity... of many of them that could be brought into one recommendation and still meet the intent, I think.
The October 15th, 16th was sent by Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are the same as or similar to these. Let me ask you, do you intend for this list to supersede your October 16th communication?
That is the same as this.
It's the same.
Except for the last year's bottom.
So you added some additional items that were.
You had some additional wording too, I think, on some of those.
Yeah.
It's actually the stack.
That's a summary,
right.
Too.
Okay.
Right, Kim and John. But it has.
That's the one he just gave.
These are the ones. Oh, yeah.
Summary
of
that.
All right. And then
you've
added
one, two, three,
these here.
These are good.
This is the one.
Okay, let's talk then. They're the ones on page 3.
I put those dates in there, so that's
okay.
Not going to help anybody.
Page 3, and let's go to those after we go through Bill's list. Does that make sense? Okay. Number 1, remove responsibility for water, and I don't think that I intend to vote on any of these at this meeting, because on some of them that are technical in nature, I'm going to want to know from the city what the implementation would cost, not what their opinion is. I may want that too, but what, like for instance, purchasing the rain gauges. All right, let's assume we did that. How much would it cost? What do you guys think about it? Before I voted on it, or before I ranked it, I'd want to know what the benefit-cost ratio would be, kind of. The number one, though, is all philosophy, I think, and not it's how you want to approach this. Bill, you want to talk about why you recommend that we take water infrastructure out of water and light and set up a separate water, sewer, and stormwater advisory board.
It's pretty much explained in my summary.
Okay, well, Tell us.
It has been proposed that responsibility for sewer and water, sewer and stormwater infrastructure should be added to the Waterline Advisory Board. Rather than adding responsibility for sewer and stormwater infrastructure to the Waterline Advisory Board, I feel that consideration should be given to removing responsibility for water infrastructure from the Waterline Advisory Board and establishing water, sewer, and stormwater advisory board. Water, sewer, and stormwater infrastructure are very similar in that they use similar equipment, personnel, and resources to convey water, primarily underground and primarily in pipes. The complex problems and challenges presented by managing electricity can be easily justified, can easily justify an independent advisory board.
Okay.
The Waterline Advisory Board is just a 5-member board.
Your recommendation then is that we have a second advisory board which deals with all water type stuff.
The expertise of the board, by the makeup of the board, is going to make it difficult and in 4 years different utilities.
All right.
You got 5 members.
Yeah, I think we had made a discussion or had a discussion about having one board cover all the utilities. What you're saying is electric's a strange enough animal, a different enough animal, and group the ones that are similar and leave electric by itself.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else on that subject?
I mean, I don't know this for a fact. It seems like the Water and Light Board has been functioning pretty well and pretty efficiently for a while. So, but I do agree that Storm and Sanitary need to have a board. So I would probably add a third option that you just have a separate Storm and Sanitary Board.
I think there's three options, at least three. One is Bill's, that you do a water, sewer, stormwater separate board. Second one is that you put it all in the current Water and Light Board. And the third is you do nothing. That it ain't broke, we shouldn't fix it.
I have a question. I don't know whether John may be able to answer this or you, Tad, one of the other. But historically, how much time has been spent on the electric utility in that board versus water on a percentage basis? I think roughly.
Well, yeah, John can certainly. Been there longer than I have actually involved, but I would say there's probably some variation that I may not really be able to give you an average over time. I mean, there's some meetings that are just all electric and some that are mostly water. I don't know, John, what's your feeling?
Oh, I'd say the map, it's it goes in a cycle and. You know, currently we've been more in electrical cycle, but now we're going to be shifting out of that into a water cycle. It's I think my my opinion on the advisory board concept is that we probably ought to just generalize it that the recommendation to the city council is that they take under consideration how they want to structure their citizen advisory board from the utilities.
A fourth idea that I hadn't even thought of.
And that, yeah. And it, you know, it goes to you know, how to structure the appointments, the qualifications for the appointments, the term of the appointments. But you know, I guess the my take on it is that, or my perception is that over time, since the if you would just look at the concept of a Water and Light Advisory Board and ask yourself, has it been a good citizen advisory board to interact with the city council and the staff? I think when you stand away from it, at the end of the day, you say yes, that it has. It's worked very well. And so as we would move forward and try to make our other utilities the best that we can, then it's maybe time to change since we've just had a organizational structural change, it would seem that this is the appropriate time to bring that under consideration and see how the council would want to structure their advisory boards. And then a part of that would be, how do they want to divide out the board as it relates to all the utilities?
And I don't know if we have time or not. It'd be nice if we had like a consensus opinion on some direction to give the council, but I agree we should.
Even if it's just two options. You know, I like Bill's suggestion because, you know, you look at the water life board, you get two different sets of expertise there. The water industry is different than the electrical industry. And if you group them like you suggest, you're bringing the same level of expertise to the board. You could have mostly stacked electrical folks or people that deal with that type of infrastructure that could probably provide more input. But we could provide multiple suggestions and let the council
sure.
decide how best to serve the need.
I am concerned about that it ain't broke. And on the unintended consequence, we know that for a long time, the current water and light system, or I don't know, my opinion is that for a long time, the current water and light board structure has worked very well over literally generations. And I don't know all the unintended consequences of changing it. And I think that's a reasonable thing to consider. I don't think that should be dispositive, but I think it's one reasonable point. It ain't broke. The next thing I think is maybe some people at the last meeting were rightly concerned about the proliferation of boards and commissions. Maybe we should put it all in water and light. And let them, if it ain't broke, they've been doing it right for some time. If you accept the premise that it's not broke, then is it better to establish a new structure or just expand the authority of the current structure which has already proven its worth? And John's idea was effectively, I guess, the same as mine, which is do not make a specific recommendation except to say to the council, you might want to rethink the current matrix of how you get citizen input on infrastructure, on utilities and infrastructure. That's what where you're effectively going with that, isn't it?
Well, it's infrastructure and operations, and it's the, you know, it's the basic premise of the advisory board acts as the liaison between the staff and the city council, and the city council has the benefit from the advisory board of consideration of citizen input and recommendations and so on that help them do their job. It appears again to me that with the organizational changes we've had and that we've identified that there may need to be more citizen advisory consideration from the other utilities to the council, that the council, since they are the beneficiary of all the advice and input, that they would be the determiner as to how they would want that citizen component structured.
We could say, I'm just thinking out loud with you here. We could say something like, the task force recommends that the council consider the question of citizen input on utilities. Here are some of the options that we thought about.
I agree.
And talked about.
Yeah.
One would be do nothing. One would be two different boards, one a kind of a water and an electric. One would be put everything in water and light.
Or just have a utility board.
That's effectively what I mean. Make the water and light board the utility board. Am I right to think that over a long period of time, there's not been much political wrangling with Water and Light over many years. There's been disagreements as to technical policy, but there hasn't been much political wrangling, has there? Over your time? You're 25 years there, you know.
Well, I don't know that I've seen, the political wrangling, I have not, in my experience, I have not seen the advisory board, for lack of a better word, politicized.
Chris?
Yeah.
If we had the opportunity to review water and electric on a citywide basis, we might answer that question.
I don't understand, Bill.
If this board had the opportunity to review water and electric citywide, we might address that question.
Excellent point.
Thinking of the basis of why we started the conversation there is the storm sewer and sanitary does not have an advisory board, but it has been successful on the water and light. Would it see the same success with those other two utilities?
As a concept.
Mm-hmm. What stormwater's done over the years, I think, is it's fair to say this. Over the years, the council occasionally points a group like us to look at the utility. This happens every so many years. Maybe that's another way that they could do it. Just every now and then get a 10-year review of, hey, what's happening with stormwater? I'm not saying that's the right answer. I'm saying that's one possibility. Okay, do I hear a consensus kind of emerging for the idea of the council should consider the question of getting citizen input in the utilities, and here are some of the options that occurred to us as worth considering.
Are we not willing to take it any further than that? Just
I'm not unwilling to. I'm just kind of getting a sense of where you guys are.
I think we're definitely going in the right direction. I don't know if we have the time or wherewithal, as far as maybe we don't know all of the information about water and electric, but I feel like we're just telling them something without giving them very much direction. We're like, here's 8 ideas of stuff you can do, but did we actually tell them anything that give them any direction?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. On the other hand, we don't have any power.
Yeah.
But your point's well taken.
Okay.
We could rank our preferences, I think. You know, we talked earlier about ranking, so if you have...
We could.
Our recommendation as a consensus would be this, but you could also consider this if you didn't like
the
recommendation.
Yeah, if there were consensus. I'd hate to send up something where we had...
That's the thing, we might not.
5 votes out of 9 for one, and 4 for another one. Because some people who might like one better, they might like it better by a whisker, you know?
Why don't you try it?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to write up for the next meeting then several possible forms for this question to be included. One's going to be just Bill's as he presents it. Another one is going to be this John's concept of you guys choose, or just telling the council to think, or asking the council to think about this, and here's some possibilities. And another one might be combine them all in water and light, you know, and then we can kind of, maybe next meeting, then we eliminate them from the bottom. All right, we hate this one. It goes away. We get down to 2 and see where we are. Does that make sense? Okay. Anybody else on number 1? All right. Number 2. Rain gauges. Why do you want the rain gauges?
So you can evaluate the system.
So you
don't know how much it rains. You can't. You have to know how much it rains.
Anybody want to comment on the rain gauge idea?
I think rainfall can vary greatly across the city.
This is one methodology. You look at Doppler radar. There's all kinds of predictability, and they can estimate just being on Doppler how much rainfall is happening in a certain area. I mean, we should look at how to measure that. Rain gauges may be one solution, but other technologies may be as well.
That's a relatively cheap.
Okay.
I mean, maybe if you think that if you know, the weather forecasters, you know, anticipate 4 inches of rain, and you have historic data that says 4 inches of rain causes this, I mean, to what end is this?
Basis back up on Hagen Street.
I mean, we pretty much know where the, I mean, unless it fails, then that's not going to be known as part of this. I mean, I like the idea. To me, I think it'd be cool, but what priority should it be?
I do see that having mobile devices that you can put in areas of problems to identify, you know, what type of rainfall is causing the issue, if they need data. Usually most of the situations are pretty obvious that they're...
I probably like it too, so, but to be the devil's advocate, why isn't it micromanaging? Why isn't it technical gathering of information that ought to be left to the engineers to figure out how they want to determine it?
Because they haven't figured it out yet.
Some of us disagree with the methodology that they've chosen. So we're going to substitute our judgment for theirs.
So then maybe the question is, since the staff is here, do you have insufficient rainfall data to do your job?
That's a case by case. That's your place instrumentation out for a specific project, try to gather data. Would you be a rain gauge as well as a flow indicator for the stormwater?
Well, we've been doing it only for sanitary sewer recently. Mm-hmm. But if we were doing
it, could apply to storm, I would think, yeah.
I don't get how rain data is different for sanitary sewer than it is for storm sewer. It's the same number of tenths of an inch in the gauge.
It's the same data if you're doing it at the same time, yes. I guess we haven't had very many stormwater projects recently just due to lack of funding. So we've been doing it with sanitary sewer, not with stormwater.
But the data is transferable.
The data could be used, yes. The data.
Is it?
But we weren't doing flow monitoring or any type of monitoring. That type with any storm drainage facilities at that time.
And rainfall data is going to make a significant impact on like a neighborhood type project on that design. Rainfall data is going to tell us more when it comes to the larger creek systems, Hinson Creek, Mill Creek, Bear Creek, those kind of systems is where it's going to give more information for us.
On the theory that what difference does it make whether in 2015 it rains more in Parkade than it does in grasslands. It doesn't matter because that's random.
You know, but then in the design of the facilities, then how does the safety factor compare to the raw data in terms of the resulting design?
Having more data, we could refine our current design standards. And essentially, if we can refine those design standards, we could potentially save money on how we size detention basins or how we size pipes.
Yeah.
So that would be a potential for rain gauge data. Now, would it significantly impact that? I don't know.
When you have a project, wouldn't you take topographic analysis and you pick a historic rain event and calculate the runoff to determine the size of that device? So the rain gauge, you have to wait for a lot of time to collect a lot of data that you can do in a calculation with topographical analysis. So, you know, I could see where if you want to get velocity or flow on a channel to try to size a pipe or structure on a specific project, but seems to me analysis is a much more cost-effective way to do the work than putting a bunch of rain gauges out. And that's just my opinion.
Bill, do you know how Springfield's using their, how Springfield's, how long they had that or what they're doing with their data?
You'd have to talk to them. I haven't talked to them. But if it started raining right now and rained for an hour and you got on the computer and found out it rained 3 inches at Agin and Worley, and you were managing the stormwater system, I think you'd go out there and look. You're waiting for somebody to call.
Good point.
You're looking at an operational, not a design.
Yes, operational.
I know people have come out to our neighborhood after big rains. I mean, you all know where your hot spots are and go check them anyway after storms, right?
We do.
It seemed like,
you know, we know we need to go clean the bridges and the culverts and stuff that always come out.
Level floats or float indicators would be a better indicator than rainfall. I mean, because if the pipe's full, it's flowing high, or the level high, then that would be an indicator that it's causing a flooding issue versus the rain. You don't know for sure about the rain because it's a time duration thing. If that rain falls in 30 minutes versus an hour and a half.
Well, you can tell that from the rain gauge.
Okay. Can we do that? A few more or less permanent rain gauge installations in the city that the data is available to us and it's not available from the way this time.
How many rain gauges, permanent and temporary, do you have right now, Roland?
I know we've got three permanent ones in the city at three different locations, and I don't know. There may be some more. I'd have to do a little research to find out exactly how many there are.
How many?
The university has some rain gauges. Dr. Hubbard with the university has its own.
Are they real time?
Yes.
Yes, so the ones the city has in real time, the ones the university has available on the internet in real time.
And then you've got some temporaries.
We don't have any installed at this time. They will be installed.
But you have some. And they're real time, too.
There have been and there will be.
I would suggest that maybe we don't make it the recommendation so specific. Just make it more of a case of the city should explore and continue to use technology because, you know, ring gauges today, something else tomorrow, but they need to explore current technology to gather appropriate data to do operational determination, like you indicated, determine where a flood is so they can get out and start pumping, or design data so that you can design and size detention or flow circuits to adequately handle rainfall.
You want to write a kind of an alternative, more generalized.
I can write kind of generic because we gave, I mean, Kevin and I talked about several that we had
next week too.
That
okay.
Really were operational things like that to use technology, and I can write up a draft for before the next
week. And then
week.
We can look at both that number two that Bill recommended and what you're going to put together. Anybody else on rain gauges? All right. Three.
I just over rains.
Very good. Thank you, John. Charge each residential property based on total impervious area at the property. I'm going to say something to the staff now. I love this, but my only hesitation is how much do it cost to do this? And how technically difficult is it? And my inclination as one member of the task force would be to vote to make this recommendation. I understand it's a big one. The only thing that could change my mind or that would inform my decision would be is how technically difficult is it and how much does it cost, would you think, to do it? And will you give us that?
Okay.
All right.
Talking about all residential property.
That's Bill's recommendation, I think, isn't it, Bill?
Yes. It could be phased in.
We'll get that information. One other thing I would say on that is do this change that in here would require going back to the citizens to have a structure.
I'm not sure you're right about that, frankly. Because you think Hancock.
That's what we've been told.
Yeah, I don't know that that's right, but I don't know it's wrong. It just doesn't, I'm not sure that's right.
When did it originate?
93.
Pardon?
93.
And did the,
so after
did
Hancock.
The was it utility created by referendum?
Based on
And a part of that was that the impervious, the determination of the fee by?
By the name of the Lord square foot.
If you think that, guys, staff guys, if you think that, then I'd like to see the legal analysis from the council saying why they believe that. Because I'm not sure that I...
Mayor Hindman had this argument with Fred many times. And Fred always said you had to take it to the vulnerable people. And I believe Nancy did it the same way.
Okay, but well, I'd like to see the analysis and hear, read the analysis, because I'm not sure. Okay. Anybody?
It seems, though, that if it was originated originally by referendum, then to change it, it would require a referendum.
Certainly wouldn't require referendum to decrease the rate. Hancock does not require a vote to decrease a rate. And I don't know that we know whether we're increasing it or decreasing it.
If you're going by impervious square footage, that brings in the driveway and everything else. So your bill, you could make it the same, basically, but you're not gaining anything by doing that.
Except equity.
Equity, yeah. Every bill would be different.
And everybody would be paying based on the amount that they contributed to the problem.
Well, if you're doing equity, the bill doesn't go up or down. It stays the same. You could probably do it that way. But I would understand the goal. If you're charging by impervious area, you would want it to be per square foot of impervious area, then your bill would go up. Because driveways today aren't considered part of the bill.
Okay.
It's only the first square foot floor of your house.
And then the other question would be city required sidewalks. That's impervious area.
Oh, that's
area.
Good too. That's important.
It's impervious
too.
Area, and
sure.
There are a lot of people who don't want to have it.
They're in the right of way.
Okay. Well, there you go.
All right. Good question.
The challenge will be is if someone changes their surface, let's say they put in a pervious surface to replace their driveway or put in rain barrel collection or whatever it may be to correct. I mean, how do they get credit for that? They'd still be charged the square footage. They'd have to petition. It'd get pretty complicated to figure out who pays what. I mean, the system's pretty simple for residential now. It really, I see it more coming into a challenge, not for single family homes or even duplexes, but when you dig into multi-story facilities, apartments, you know, eightplexes, all the big, because that's really where you're charging per space, but you know, you have certain occupancy and you really need to go off a pervious surface.
That change is huge, or could be huge, right, for in the apartment area.
Right. I see it for apartments, not as much as single family homes.
Kelly, I'll try to get an opinion from the legal staff to get back to you.
On the Hancock question, but then there's these technical things.
I would have to go back for a vote.
That'd be good. Anybody else on this number three?
Credits weren't part of this. Credit system wasn't part of the recommendation. Credit for rain barrels. Greg mentioned a credit.
Yeah, I.
Credits.
We talked
could
about
be
that.
Eliminated.
We talked about that last week. Is if.
But it's not, yeah, that's not part of the recommendation.
Right. Yeah.
I understand.
All right, four. Bill a stormwater charge to the owner of each, the owner is the key there, right, Bill?
Yes.
Owner of each developed property, as distinct from renters, right?
From the utility account holder.
From the?
Utility account holder.
Which amounts to renters, right?
It could be the owner. The owner could be utility account holder.
Right. But the change effectively means that the owner of a multi-family dwelling,
any dwelling
would have it billed to him.
Any dwelling.
I have the same question here that I had before. Is how difficult and expensive is it is to do this? Is there some technical either billing or operational reason why this is counterproductive? And that's very much a staff question. How much would it cost, and how much ongoing staff time? Does it require more ongoing staff time such that although it might produce greater equity and more bills, it might, in the last analysis, not be worth it because somebody has to fool with the stuff all the time.
I agree.
You agree, too?
Yeah.
That, in theory, it's a great idea. The only question is...
Both the last two, I'm following along right with you, and I would probably need some more information from
all
the
right.
city.
Bill, monthly stormwater. Anybody else on changing the charge to the owners rather than the apartment or the utility? Anybody else on that? Okay. Bill, monthly stormwater charge on a quarterly, biannual, or annual basis. Anybody got any thoughts on that? Well, I think we all understand that. I think, in fact, I like it, and I think most
I think
people
it
do.
Makes good sense for commercial properties.
Sure.
But not maybe as much for residential. People that are trying to balance month by month and...
Oh, okay.
Don't want a big bill every quarter that they have trouble paying. But on a commercial property, you know, that would they probably like to pay quarterly, not have to...
Well, if your bill is like $1.15 a month for one residential unit, maybe...
That's a good point.
Pay that yearly.
Yeah, if it was an electric bill, it'd be a different story. But this is $3, you know.
But they're already getting it through their utility bill, just getting at it every month.
But they
it would be the large commercial properties that you're sending a bill out for a smaller amount every month, and they're writing a check every month for every property they have,
sure.
versus aggregating it and paying quarterly. And they're in the position to pay several hundred or $1,000 a month to pay for all their properties and pay quarterly versus monthly.
If you're billing a residential bill to the owner, you need to get one bill though, stormwater.
Any staff thinking on the technical part of that for next time too, right? If you guys got any comments or things that we're not, because the number of things that we don't know is so huge. And so anything that is a potential fly in the ointment. All right. Phase out. Anybody else on billing timing?
Are we talking about, just to clarify, we're talking about tenant-occupied properties being billed less often than monthly, but not, if I'm the tenant, not allowing me the option of being billed quarterly, right? We're not talking about that.
You wouldn't get a bill if you're a tenant.
Well, as part of my utilities, I guess. If we make the switch to where the landlords are being charged the stormwater fee, and I, as the tenant, are still paying my electric and water.
You wouldn't get a stormwater
bill. I wouldn't get a stormwater bill.
That's right.
Okay.
So, in essence, number 5 goes with number 4 here. Okay. That's what I'm understanding. Is that correct?
Okay.
That could be separate.
So 4 and 5 could be one, too, couldn't they? Bill the owner on a longer-term basis.
How do you deal with, I mean, single-family residence rentals? I mean...
Well, right now...
I mean, I can see this for a multi-apartment complex, but you're talking about who knows how that property is being owned and rented, and I guess you could always send it to the owner, but then you're sending out an additional bill. You're sending a bill to the owner and a... that is at a different residence than whoever's running that property, and it's a single family house. You're sending out 2 bills now, one for the utilities and one for the storm sewer.
Yes.
That's a really good point, and exactly the kind of...
You're adding more work and not taking
away. ...unintended consequence that I would like the staff to...
But if you're...
I think when we were kind of thinking about the question we put it in was, if it's not included in the existing billing system, would it be... wise to take it to a quarterly. You know, obviously, if we already have a billing system in place right now, it wouldn't make much sense to pull out a separate billing system.
Okay.
But if we were looking as property owners to break it out from the existing billing system, we kind of put those together when we're going to provide the response. I think that's what we thought we were asking.
Will you guys give us a specific recommendation on that?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
With our intent.
Anybody else on 5? I don't mean to be. Are you awake?
I'm totally awake. I'm just trying to.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's see here, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
So they give us a recommendation, and then we accept a recommendation. Does that go into the report?
If we want to make it as one of our recommendations, we may vote it down or not want to do it. I just want to make sure we're not stumbling around the dark without something that we don't realize. We could make a recommendation that we think is good without knowing what the operational ramifications are.
That's not what I said.
Okay.
No, what I said was, so they come back with their recommendation and we accept their recommendation. So does it go in the report?
I think so, yeah. If we like it.
But what if it hadn't changed anything?
Well, then we might change it.
All right.
You might look at it and say, yeah, I understand what you think. I disagree and want to make this recommendation. But at least then we'd have the technical data.
All right.
I'm just trying, on most of these, I'm just trying to make sure we get the greatest amount of technical data so that we don't inadvertently make a recommendation that ends up being operationally foolish. Okay. Phase out the stormwater discount being provided to the University of Missouri, or establish stormwater discount criteria that would be available to any customer. Anybody out? Bill, you want to talk about that at all?
Well, the discount being provided to the University of Missouri is not in the stormwater ordinance at the present time. So there's nobody else that's eligible for a discount. I think that's inequitable.
Okay.
So any customer will be eligible for a discount or no customer.
I thought the university had their own stormwater system.
Beg your pardon?
I thought they had this university handled their own stormwater.
There's other customers that have their own stormwater too.
But not through city property. I mean, I think from the university standpoint, and I'm not speaking fully on behalf of the university, but is that we're satisfied with the arrangement we've had and negotiated a contract with the city years ago, still in place, evergreen contract, could be canceled by either party. But the expectation if we were to give the discount up, would the city be in position to start taking over the maintenance of the system? Because we pay for the maintenance of the system now, but the city does not have to pay for it. Not only the maintenance, but the improvement and upgrade to the system. So we're investing a significant amount of resources to do that. We'd have to talk about, if we lose that contract, how is that going to work out?
I understand that.
I don't think it's a big gain, Bill. I think it's not.
I understand the equity in theory. If you want it to be stipulated in the ordinance, you could just say, use some wording that only the university would ever be eligible for it, like partners in the MS4 permit are eligible for discount, and then there.
You could do it that way, but you could. Stevens College could have a similar situation in the university.
If they had their own infrastructure in place, but to my knowledge, they don't.
I don't
know. So is the question, was it ever legislated?
One thing I'd point out, too, is the university discount only applies to the university property within a defined boundary. For instance, Women's and Children's Hospital or the University of North, the old Ellison Shell Hospital, they pay 100% of the normal full rate. Any property outside
That's correct. It's only the contiguous campus that runs off directly to the watersheds, both the Hinkson and the Flat Branch watershed. All other properties are paid at full rate throughout the community.
What we came to think of is the color campuses, white campus, the red campus, that
the contiguous that campus, basic right.
Center.
So then maybe
I think the recommendation could be, and I'll just throw this out there, that it be explored again and re-reviewed. But just to say we're going to take it away may not be the best suggestion. Maybe
I'd say take it away or offer to anybody.
If they got their own full utility system in.
Yes.
Are there any other institutions in the city limits that, no.
Nobody has that kind of system that you work with. What I might recommend is that we develop criteria for a discount system.
I thought the ordinance does establish it does allow the utility to make those arrangements with parties.
But we've never developed a criteria for it.
Okay.
So you don't think having some criteria is necessarily a bad thing?
No.
I think
generally hate objective criteria, but
we go back and look how we did universities and how much miles of pipe they have and what they take care of and base it on that, then you know, you could extrapolate it out to Stevens College or Columbia College if they have. And you could have a minimum size of the criteria that you give a discount for.
I think that would address my concerns.
Okay.
So the discount was granted by an interpretation of a ordinance. Okay. And
in the specific agreement that the council authorized by ordinance between the university and the city.
In 1996.
And discount of 50%.
Okay.
And
so,
the university.
So it's been legislated and that's right. Makes it effective and that there gives you the power to do it.
It was established in 1996. Yeah. It's an evergreen contract or agreement that could be canceled by either party with a year's notice.
Okay. So in theory, anybody, if I had a system, I could come and ask for a similar deal today.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else on that one? Okay. Let's look at...
Chris?
Yes, sir.
I've got... three other recommendations to click off the other sheet.
Yeah, I'm just going to them.
Okay. There are my recommendations. I'll click them off the other sheet that was submitted by the other.
Okay. Bill, what you're talking about is the city should evaluate going to the voters, that one?
Yes.
Okay.
They came off the other recommendation from...
Right. Number one is the city should evaluate going to the voters by 2020 to seek approval to sell bonds to be used to catch up on the backlog. Again, that's not one that requires technical thinking. As I don't think as much as it is what kind of recommendations we're going to make. Does anybody want to visit about that at all?
I do.
Yes, sir.
Okay, approval to sell bonds. Currently, there's no statutory authority for the stormwater to issue revenue bonds. And therefore, to get to a point of having a bond election and selling bonds, it has to be within the state statutes to permit the city to issue those bonds.
Right.
So then, prior to 2020, we'd have to work with our local representatives, the Missouri Municipal League, the chamber, and whoever else that would be in support of that to change the state law to permit the existence of stormwater revenue bonds.
So should we say this way? The city should consider whether to ask or to seek a state law change so that they could issue revenue bonds. And further, if you want to say, and we think the city should issue revenue bonds.
Right, and there are presently other municipalities that have created stormwater utilities that are hamstrung by the same avoidance of the ability to issue bonds, and they also would be in support of it. And so
maybe we don't need to be so specific. Maybe the recommendation would be the city explore different alternatives to finance the backlog of stormwater utility projects to catch up their deferred list, whether it be revenue bonds or other financial instruments, but at least they should explore that going forward. Otherwise, the deferment is going to continue and problems will continue and will never be caught up.
The bigger picture that this encompasses is the diverging graph.
Correct.
And how do we deal with the diverging graph problem? You know, I kind of like the specific, 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 how specific this one is. Because I like recommendations which say, consider this approach, rather than more generally. I agree, but I think in this case we ought to maybe be more specific. But that's just... All right, anybody else on that? Okay. Cities should develop a rating system to prioritize stormwater repairs and replacements. From my perspective, that's a slam dunk from everything we've heard during the course of our discussions. But anybody else on it?
I agree. We need it. All right. I mean, are we going to leave it vague like that? Do we need to come up with some more direction or no?
I don't think so.
I mean, they're capable, I know. But do
they're
we have
engineers.
Specific things we want to them to, like, I know Greg and Kim came up with,
gave
with a couple of things.
We listed some criteria.
But, I mean, it was...
Well, City already has a ranking system.
Yeah, and Erin's the smartest person in the world. She can...
But they didn't. It didn't seem like new versus old.
I didn't see any like quantitative analysis.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was all qualitative, like subjective.
Kind of subjective, yeah.
Yeah, maybe objective. Put that in there. An objective rating system.
Well, Greg and I talked about, well, like the Agin thing. New failures shouldn't jump to the front of the line, or squeaky wheel, or you know, length that they've been waiting, severity of the problem should somehow be weighted.
All criteria should be brought in, and it should be fully objective and open to the public so you can't draw on scrutiny and try to minimize the political aspect of choosing which project is next. It should be really based on that criteria.
The city should develop an objective rating system.
Yep.
Anybody else? But I think that we all are. Am I wrong to think we're all there on that one? Okay. Anybody else anything they want to add about that? Last one. Cities should conduct regular surveys to make sure all properties are being appropriately billed for stormwater charges. Did we cover that in the other stuff?
I don't think we covered it today, but specifically.
Okay, and it doesn't hurt to put it in there, and then the council can say, well, we've got that covered when we look at it. Maybe we should put something very specific in here about the rich people in the fourth ward want the poor people in the third ward to pay for their stuff. No, I'm just checking to see if you're awake. He's not amused. Okay. Any other recommendations that we want to consider?
We have three more pages. I don't know if you want to try
yeah,
to address
let's
those
go.
Today or with the.
I do.
If you want to do the presentation for the roads and table this to the next meeting, we'll spend another hour or so on the rest of the recommendations.
Okay, I think that's a good idea because it's going to get late and we have to do the recommendation and we've already given them enough to pray over between now and the next meeting anyway, haven't we?
Amen.
But
okay.
I do think it'd be real be advisable if city could help merge Bill's additional recommendations that he brought forward with this other list, and so we have one succinct list of recommendations and try to numerically list them. One through how many?
Will you lead us through the rest of them then next time?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
You asked for public comment on what we've done so far?
Pardon?
Ask for public comment on the public discussion.
Anybody?
So far?
Yeah, sure. Anybody from the public want to say anything? Yes.
I would like to make a public comment.
You may.
My name is Pat Fowler. I live in the first ward, and I brought my electric bill, or my utility bill. I call it my electric bill because it's the largest part of my bill.
Sure.
Although it is a combined bill. And the proposal to merge everything into the water and life board concerns me. I think a better result for me as the owner of a small house in the urban core would be that there be a separate board for water, sewer, and stormwater, because there's different issues at play here. When I look at my bill, the electric bill is 3 times larger than my water bill. It's 4 times larger than my sewer or trash bill, and it's 100 times larger than my stormwater bill, which means it's got the most muscle in the room. And since these areas, stormwater, sewer, and water in the urban core, have not had the same attention because there's too much muscle in the room with electric, it makes more sense from my perspective where
really
that stuff
point.
Is literally rotting out from underneath my sidewalks in my house.
Really good point.
That they get the kind of attention they need, because they clearly haven't gotten the kind of attention they've needed for the last 40 years, or we wouldn't even be having this task force. I also think there's separate perils there. You know, if there's a problem with electricity, people die immediately. If there's a problem with sewer, storm water, or water, that's a public health issue that kills us more slowly. And so you have an entirely different set of priorities in how you deal with those things. I have an entirely different set of priorities in how I deal with it as a homeowner in the downtown area in Columbia. And also, I think that because of the extra regulatory layers put on top of electric, you have folks that come as part of their regular jobs to those meetings. Those meetings are not accessible to me as a homeowner and to a citizen from when you have them and the times that you need to transact that business. And particularly because of the 40 years of inactivity on the stormwater, sewer, and some of the water issues, I intend to be actively involved as a citizen because I need to protect my house in the downtown area. And so I can't do that effectively when there's an infrastructure in place that already has removed my ability to participate in that process. So it may not be broken, but it's not working for me. And so I'd like a system that works for me as a property.
Stunningly good point.
Thank you for listening.
First utility board.
Anybody else? Either of our esteemed council members want to add anything at this point? This would be a good time to do that.
Let me just make one comment, and it is that there was a comment made about the advisory boards and their interaction with the city council, and on the other side, the interaction of the city council with the public as elected official. I see a little bit different, I think, than you do, John. You mentioned something about the idea of the waterline, and I think the waterline advisory board's done a remarkable job for many, many years, and kudos to you for doing that. But I don't see the Water and Light Advisory Board as a liaison to the staff for the City Council. I see the Water and Light Advisory Board as a totally separate entity that gives professional citizen advice to the City Council in a very different manner than the professional advice that comes from the engineers. It's information from two different sources. And it's one of the reasons that I'm not trying to render any judgment, because I want to double dip and we're going to make decisions and so on and so forth. But I think what we do need to do is cover infrastructure. And we have certainly covered water and light infrastructure very capably for a long time. We have not covered sewer and stormwater. We also, one of my big pet peeves is we have not covered road infrastructure. You're going to be talking about road infrastructure. And God knows I don't want too many more proliferation of public boards and commissions and all the rest of that stuff. But somehow, and I don't want to also make it seem like we ought to load this into one group, because that's a huge burden. I mean, there's a lot to be done just for water and light. There's also a lot to be done for stormwater. And God knows there's a lot to be done for roads. But a solution that can deal with hard infrastructure, and you know we have a touch soft infrastructure, but that would deal with all of those, includes water, light, stormwater, and sewer, and roads, would be enormously helpful.
Councilman Ian, you have anything you want to add?
I don't actually have much of a problem with the proliferation of boards and commissions. I think it's free labor, and I think it really increases the engagement in our entire community. So other than that, I support what Carl said. I think we should have citizen boards and commissions on all the utilities as well as the transportation system.
Anybody else? Citizens. Okay. Let's hear from the staff on transportation.
All right. Thank you.
With me is Richard Stone. He's a supervisor in our Traffic Street Division. And Allison Anderson, she's our engineer in our CIP. So I got to thank them for assisting with this and doing all the work, really. And I get to sit up here and talk about it. And we also robbed a little bit from Aaron so that we kind of have continuity. Because we do see the roads and our stormwater system functioning as a unit as well. So we work off a long-term plan for our streets. It's the 2040 long-range transportation plan and our CATSO major roadway plan, and I'll get into those in a little bit. Long-term plan for sidewalks is the same with the 2040 long-range plan, the sidewalk master plan, and a walkable Columbia report that we're working off of. This is the CATSO plan, and it identifies the different categories of our roadway classifications. We use this when we have planning through developments, the type of roadways that will be designated when those developments come in. And CATSO, it is our, it's the Columbia Area Transportation Study Organization. It's the MPO that was created in 64 by the governor, responsible for assuring coordinated planning efforts. It is composed of a technical and coordinating committee, and I'll get into each one of those here. Technical really is the review of the technical aspects of all the plans, studies, reports that are brought in. It's comprised of the staff, city staff, Boone County, and MoDOT staff. Those recommendations are then forwarded to a coordinating committee that actually acts upon those recommendations. They hold public hearings, soliciting citizen input, and it's composed of a higher level MoDOT staff, Federal Highway staff, FTA, which is the Federal Transit, Boone County Commission, and the mayor. In the long-range plan, it incorporates a lot of public input and priorities developed, such as sidewalk plan, the public transit, human services coordination plan, parks master plan, and comprehensive plan, and updated every 5 years by the CATSO as the MPO. And then the last long-range plan was adopted February of 2014. With that, in our planning efforts, we do have street and infrastructure studies. This is an example of some of the ones that we've pulled out in the last 10 or so years. Generally, these have impacts that we look for future development in, guides us on how we might treat road improvements and with our prioritization in our budget as well. And that goes to a level. And just as a note, we do meet street division, the engineering division meets with the other city departments about our plans, about these studies, coordinating our efforts with their efforts on their CIPs, making sure that we aren't, and this has been said before, tearing up a road after our, after a water line's gone in, or vice versa. So we're coordinating those at least twice a year. Streets. Miles of residential streets, 372 miles of our collector streets, and then our arterial streets, and these were identified on that CATSO plan as the type of roads, and I'll get into what they look like, but these are the actual miles of centerline streets we have now for a total of 508 miles. This is kind of a quick summary of how we've grown since 1970. You can kind of see by decade where we had a lot of growth. You can kind of see where we're starting in this one. And we've only added 18 miles, so comparative. Things might have been slowing down a little bit of where we're at halfway through.
When you say added, are you talking about putting a street where there was not a street before?
It's through this method right here, annexation,
okay,
accepted by private development, taken over from Boone County, taken over from MoDOT, and then constructed by the city CIP. The last ballot, we actually built new roadways where there were no roadways before. Annexation, we take in roads through that process. Private development, developer builds a subdivision, and so forth.
What's the typical majority, is it, of that? Do you have a split?
I don't, but I think by private development is probably...
Residential, commercial development.
Yeah.
Roads.
Yeah, and that growth that you saw in probably in the 201 to 210, we were having a lot of development subdivisions that went in that we took those in. And that's, we wanted to just add and show you a map of just the city annexation. I'm sorry you can't really see this, but it goes all the way back into the 1800s, I think, is when we started with this. And that's just kind of the growth of the city. And as it's grown, that infrastructure's been taken in as well.
So that was a map of the city, limits of the city?
Mm-hmm.
The outer boundary of all those colors?
In each year.
The little pink in the middle is what it was in 1820 or whatever?
I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of how we've grown. One I mentioned earlier, Centerline Mile, we have kind of looked at our infrastructure a little differently and looking at it versus lane mile. Centerline is a measure of length, and a lane mile is a measurement of area. And so with an example here, you've got a two-lane road, has one centerline mile, but it has actual two lane miles, okay? This is a four lane with bike lanes. That might be one centerline mile, but the way we're looking at it from an infrastructure standpoint is five lane miles.
So that's
fine, a lane 12 feet?
That's in general, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of 11, but I mean,
approximately.
And we're gonna look at it, it's more of an area versus a length. Because this would be an example, Scott Boulevard in 07 was a 22-foot roadway. Currently, it's four lanes with bike lanes and turning lanes, and you can see the infrastructure difference when you talk about maintaining centerline miles, and when you're talking in that lingo versus centerline miles here, we want to make that distinction of that's how we're starting to look at our infrastructure is in lane mile.
Was the 508 miles centerline miles?
Mile. Okay. That's correct. So this comparison would be 5.5 lane miles. So as the city's grown, the amount of area of the street is grown, not just length. So we can no longer do length. We're really adjusting the way our budgeting is from a lane mile standpoint. And what you were asking about, this is the total lane miles. Compared to the 508. And sidewalks, we do work off a sidewalk master plan, maintained since 1976 with updates, as you can see, in 81 all the way up to 07. Prioritizing where sidewalks do not currently exist, and mainly I think it's on the collectors and arterials. But basically it does provide us guidance in how we move forward with our budgeting for sidewalk improvements and construction. And we use that guide, and this is the current 2012 master plan. And I apologize again for not being able to read that, but these are, and I'll have references at the end where you can find these if you're interested in looking at where these were developed through the, and these were done through the planning division. So we have a capital improvement program. It's a multi-year capital, it's investment that we, for our facilities, mainly for streets. Our last ballot did include public safety, but a majority of that is street sidewalks. First one was improved in 91, and the last one, 05, we're just now completing. Voters were very helpful in letting us approve the next 10 year, then in 15. It's expected to generate another $63 million for the next 10 years. And we have proposed kind of a five-year lump, if you will, to kind of get us how we're going to fund the budget. And we've selected a few projects to get us started in the first 5 years. And with this as well, we've got annual monies in our budgets so that we can do projects that are not identified in these lists, but when needs arise, when cost share opportunities are there, we can have annual monies to match and to do needed projects as well. The last 5 years, we're looking at this list of projects, and these, like I said, are also things that we can get to you more specific if you want to know more about these projects. They are on our website, but this was just recently passed in August. And this is a visual representation of where those projects are within the city. And each one, like I said, has specific criteria that we looked at when we chose them. They went through a public process. We had council participation. We had an online survey. And then it went to council for public approval before it went to the public vote. In 04, the city council approved an ordinance amending our chapter 25. It allowed us to adopt our street standards to include sidewalks and bikeways. And this was something that was important for us in providing safe, convenient travel for all users of our roadways in our right-of-ways. In 2014, Catsall formally adopted the term complete streets, but we think we had the term pegged back in 04, and that's exactly what it is. It's a complete streets profile, and I'll show you some details of that as well. In our non-residential roadways, you can see the different right-of-ways, the pavements. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what we call a typical cross-section, but the right-of-ways, the outer boundary, we have buffer, we have sidewalks, we have pedways, if you will, or white sidewalks, usually on one side. This is what we call a non-residential. This is our residentials. Typically, you'll see these in these new subdivisions that are being built. We try to get shy distance and space between our back of curb and our sidewalks. And generally, our right-of-ways are 1 foot behind the back of sidewalks. You can see as the road classification is higher, therefore the pavements get wider, and typically those sections and the thickness also gets beefier as we handle more traffic and generally more heavier traffic. And we have different classifications for collectors. And the reason you see some options is that we work with the developers on, allow them to kind of fit maybe the neighborhood to an option. Some of these might look more urban, some might look a little more spacious, and so we allow those options and we'll work with them on proposing what that collector might look like. And then, of course, our arterials, which was the example that we showed, was Scott Boulevard. And this is an option that we have where we actually allow ditches for our arterials instead of curb and gutter sections. So we do provide that option and flexibility in developing those. And so an example, I don't know if you're familiar with Mexico Gravel is, out just east of, I guess, the Vandiver.
It's Third Ward.
Yeah, there we go.
It's the northeast.
So if you see that mailbox right there, I don't know if you can see it on the next to the roadway, there it is right there. So what we've done is we built the roadway section to an ultimate build out. So what we have, we didn't need this much pavement now, but when we do in 20 years or whatever, we've got the road set up so we can widen out. We don't have to move any utilities. We don't have to move any other infrastructure. The sidewalks are in place. We add pavement and we're done. So that was some of our strategy in moving forward with these types of projects.
That is, David, is that the same concept that's we will be seeing on Scott Boulevard Phase 3?
That's correct. The sidewalks will be set back.
Yep.
That's what all we'll have is to add pavement whenever the traffic warrants the additional.
That's what it'll look like.
And here's Rolling Hills. This is a road I mentioned earlier. Well, not this road, but a road about adding new infrastructure through our CIP on a road that did not exist. And this is half of a arterial. We did the, to the left would be the extension of the four lanes. When the traffic warrants that, we do have the right-of-way cleared. We'll have the infrastructure from a stormwater standpoint in place. So when we come back, we don't have to buy more right-of-way. We don't have to bother anybody. We just add pavement. And this is an urban project that we did with CDBG money, Hunt Avenue. And how am I doing? do it on time. And this was an unimproved street that went to the CDBG board to take a urban setting to see if we can improve with sidewalks, curb and gutter, improve the aesthetics of it. Some people liked this, some people did not. So that's an example of some people prefer having their street untouched. But this was what we can do from a local street standpoint. Sidewalk is right behind the curb. We don't have the green space. We try to minimize that impact to the property there by not encroaching any further than we need to. Chapel Hill Road, another example. It's set in place for, you see the sidewalk over here, big wide green space, trees were planted there. There again, whenever we need to do that, it's just a matter of...
Who maintains the green space on those wide sections?
I think for the most part...
Is it the developer, the homeowner?
We maintain the trees, I do know that. And I think the homeowners are responsible for that green space. In some places where it's dedicated for public use, then it'll be the city would maintain those. So, and this is one I mentioned, Scott. It was had a different angle, but this is before and of course after. And we did not need to wait for this to build out to 5-lane. We built it because the traffic warranted, and so it was built to the full arterial.
What's the speed limit on that street?
I believe it's 45.
45, the minimum? You got to go 45?
That's absolutely true.
Keep up.
Did you say minimum? I think it's signed at 45. I'll just say it that. It's signed at 45. So our bridges.
Before we go off roads, I have a question on that. On annexation, when you bring in roads, whether they be like residential development or other roads, do you have those roads come up to standard, or how do you address those?
Usually they're brought up in concept review about road concerns and things like that. Is that correct, Richard? Is
and typically for a brand new subdivision development, they do have to meet our street standards. Mm-hmm. If it's annexing new property that's outside the city, there is a potential that we would annex road that is not up to city standards.
So you have to look at that. You may be taking on a road liability or cost liability with an annexation, but there may be value in bringing on tax revenue that justifies it.
That's correct. Typically, if it's a development that creates that, it would be an impact study that would be done to try to figure out what needs to be fixed.
There are instances where there are private developments that have roads that are not, that they want us to take over, and unless they are brought up to standard on those type of situations, we will not take those in until they are brought up to standard. Okay. So, the bridges, a very short section of a very expensive roadway, okay? All our bridges are inspected every 2 years by MoDOT. They are rated.
I have a question. Do they actually do that?
Yes.
So every bridge is actually inspected every 2 years?
Our bridges are.
Both the bridges that are state roads and the bridges that are city roads?
The city roads, I'm not sure about what the frequency of the state, but I'm assuming they do. But our program is the MoDOT inspector goes with our inspector, and they fill out an inspection form, and they get ratings for the substructure, superstructure, alignment, and different things. And what that does, it allows you to apply for federal money through the bridge replacement program, bridge rehab program. There's different federal. If it's rated at a certain level, is it 3, 4, in that range, then you're eligible to apply for an 80-20 grant through federal, but you got to work up credits to get that.
So that's not a goal, that's a reality.
That's a reality. And so we are also wanting to contract with Mizzou to do an analysis of how we do bridge maintenance for those as well. So we are going to use their expertise in helping us develop some of our maintenance programs. One thing I will mention, a bridge is defined from fill face of 20 feet. Anything under that is not inspected by MoDOT. So that's something we have to rely on staff to do, like a box culvert or things like that. Those are something that we do in-house. So this program, this inspection, allows us to leverage federal funds for any improvements that...
Effectively, if it looks like a bridge, it is a bridge.
Pretty much, yeah. There are some that you think that should be a bridge that, you know, are maybe a box culvert, and the way they are defined is a little bit different, but there's criteria for that. This would be an example. This bridge had a low rating. We leveraged federal funds, and we replaced it with this bridge, and we were able to add the pedestrian facilities for both sides to, and that was part of our application to them, is that this, we wanted this to have those type of facilities. We also were able to use some of our Get About money, which is a different program, and we actually tied in a trail system off the end of this bridge into a trail system. So that's the bridge system that we have. Transportation sales tax is generally the biggest contributor to what I call our street operations. This is different from the capital improvement, okay? Capital improvement is a different program than what I'm about to get into, okay? This is the transportation sales tax. It's 0.25 cent. It is divided among street and sidewalk operations, transit operations, and airport operations. And those are the percentage right now that that fund is divided into.
The sales tax generates the contiguous sales of everything in the community.
Yes.
Does the airport have an advisory board?
Yes.
Give them a strong line.
So in our, with those type of funds, we, in talking about our infrastructure, in our pavement preservation plan, we look at as a set of planned actions that are done structurally on sound pavements to extend their life. And I'm going to go into what I'm going to talk about. It's the application of the right treatment on the right road at the right time, and it's to save or delay future expenditures. And if you look at this, and you can see that we're out there on a lot of cases doing maintenance on good roads. And this is the reason why. This curve will tell you the pavement condition over time. If we catch that preservation at the right time with the right treatment, we can extend that life, hit it again, extend that life. If we let pavements go too far, then you can kind of see what it takes to get them back to a serviceable condition. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about this. So, you know, we get asked, well, why are you doing maintenance on a good-looking road? And this is why, okay? We want to keep that infrastructure in good condition. And the way we prioritize for our treatments is we use field observation. We use a PASER rating. It's a nationally accepted pavement management rating system, and we'll go into that. We have recommendations for our street supervisors. They're out in the street every day. They have, it's broken into quadrants. Each supervisor's over a section of the city. Those street supervisors are very proud of their area. They look after their area. They are they take pride in their recommendations, so they're out looking at those streets. But we also are looking at...
They have zone areas. That's
yes.
How they work.
Mm-hmm. And they their crews fixed when work orders come in. That's, and it's in that area that it'd be assigned to that supervisor. So they are very well aware of the streets in their area. In doing our management, we have budget constraints, but we're using engineering judgment. We're looking at upcoming construction projects, because if we know that one of the projects in our CIP is going to be improved in 2016, 2017, I'm going to hold off on doing some type of preservation on that, because it's likely to be upgraded in that project. And also, I mentioned earlier, we do work with the utility divisions on all planned projects, and whether we do a chip seal or anything like that, we're going to make sure that those utilities have had an opportunity to make changes to their infrastructure before we cut that pavement. One thing we are doing
about that, I know, you know, we coordinate with you, we communicate quarterly with the university and the city,
right,
because of these issues. Do you do the same thing with Ameren? I mean, Ameren's got gas lines and through the streets. And
Ameren has sort of come to the table.
We do send them what we're planning on doing the next year. And so far, we've been doing that for 3 years, and we've been able to coordinate around. There was one project that we had to kind of shift around, but so far, it really hasn't come up as a major concern.
Yeah. And we're starting to utilize the GIS information. We're finding that to be an awesome tool for us as we move forward. This is the manual that we were talking about, and basically it allows us to rate our pavements on a scale of 1 to 10. And the example to the right, this is the actual manual itself. It just kind of gives you what a 1 to 10 would look like. And it's very simple. It's standard. It does have limitations, but it allows a lot of input for people that can understand this. You know, it's a very simplistic approach. There are more complex techniques, and we talked about that today a little bit.
Is there a grading system for concrete?
Yeah, there's asphalt, concrete, and even the county even has one for gravel roads. So they've actually been able to develop criteria for that as well. And it has a lot to do with drainage as well. But this technique works very well for us. The investment to go to a higher technique, we just haven't seen the payback. We think we can get as good at information through the PAYSER rating instead of spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy other tools at this point. And with GIS coming on, you know, as we're bringing that into it, I think we're going to be able to use that technology to help us in our rating. It's going to allow us to build on that information. Ultimately, we're going to put more information in that other than just the PAYSER, like the pavement condition indexing, which is more of a concrete analysis. Is that correct for the pavement, the PCI? And so with GIS, we're going to start building a lot more of our database. And also, ultimately, what we're going to do is we're going to get this out to the public so they can see what the roads are rated, how they're rated, and have that available. So this will be a tool as we prioritize and move forward with our program.
What's the green?
You know, that's some of the rated streets.
This is actually available to the public right now. Launched it as we're going to do that next year.
So the green are streets that you've already rated.
These are what you're actually seeing a screenshot of is what we actually did this past year. The green are actually showing where chip seals went.
Oh, okay.
The reds are milling overlay. A couple other things that we were doing that they're blue or thin lipped overlays. There's some other things.
Did you have utility layer?
This is an interactive viewer.
Do you bring utility layers into this as well? I mean, obviously,
yes.
Utilities that crisscross streets or via the streets. And
yeah. Internally, we've done some work on the utility side of things, but there's some security concern issues that kind of can't go around.
Well, yeah, I can see we're not putting up a public, but at least you have that layer for your engineering team to layer that and turn it on to see impact if you're going to change a road out.
Correct.
You can know what's underneath it.
Yeah, and you know, we've delayed some streets because we know we've got some stormwater projects coming up.
Example of that is Texas Avenue is going to be more than overlaid this year. We worked with the Water Light Department. They weren't comfortable in being able to finish the project, the big project that it just did. So we shifted back our milling overlay to next year.
And then the outcome is to try to be as transparent as possible with what we're doing and where we're working. Budgeting, from a budget standpoint, this is what was in the city manager's budget message. And this is current needs right now from what we call our contractual services and our street materials. And what I'm talking about is street maintenance. This is street maintenance. We're about 1.4 short of where we feel we need to be to get those roads at a rated at a rating that we would like for them to be at.
What's your goal rating on your rating system for your shortfall? You're trying to get them all to a 6 or 7? Or
Yeah, 6. And
what's a good or better, 6 or 7, all that graded 10? Or
yeah. Okay. I think about 7.
7 is a pretty good number.
Yeah. In the last 3 years, though, we've had a tremendous support from council and the public in funding more road maintenance. And from the citizen survey, clearly the results have shown that. We're shrinking that gap. We think that that spending is going to be needed. It's getting smaller. We are really thankful for that. We are looking at lots of preservation techniques, incorporating innovation solutions. We've tested some different products. You're going to see a few slides here. This is just some of the tools in the toolbox, if you will, on what might bring that pavement back to that 7 level, and you know, if it dips down. Obviously, we use a rejuvenator. It's targeted on new asphalt. So there again, you're going to see new asphalt getting treated. But for that type of square yard cost, we can extend that life and move that good needle out further. Okay. So in some cases, a road might need a little bit different treatment. It's more of a sealer. If we can keep the moisture out of our roadways, then we can eliminate or try to minimize potholes, because that is that freeze thaw that destroys a lot of our pavements and potholes, so we use sealers. This is something that we're having a pretty good success. A lot of people are finding it not as desirable, but it is a very cost-effective solution in getting that road back up to a higher level, and also increases friction. And you see that sealer, that oil is a sealer, and the chip is really a blotter, if you will, to keep a lot of the traffic off. But that treatment works well. When we get to roads that are in that 4 to 6, then we have to go to a little more expensive treatment to get it back up. And this is an overlay, cost per square yard. Then in certain streets that even need a little more preservation, we didn't get to it maybe as soon as we needed to, we've got to make the decision to go to a mill and overlay. And you can see that particular cost there. Basically, that is to take that 1.5 inch surface off and then put a new wearing surface, 1.5 inch of asphalt back in there. And then ultimately, when we've got sections that we have lost, we end up having to do replacements. And these can be very expensive per square yard.
How do these hold up, like the chip and seal with snow removal?
They do pretty well.
Do they?
Yeah. We've really tweaked our oil. We've been working on a combination of the type of oil and the rate of application, and we're finding that we're really having pretty good adhesion with the rock. We use a mountain iron rock. It's a high-grade rock that has a high wearing surface. It's a really strong, durable rock. You'll see some places where they use limestone as a blotter, and it actually just crushes itself. But our rock is a durable rock. We're actually finding that we're not as sweeping up near as much as we used to. But that's some of the things that Richard and his staff have been able to figure out. How can we do better? And they're working at that.
I think on new road construction, you know, from all the years I've lived in Missouri, it seems like no road surface is the right selection. But you got a mixture of asphalt paved surface as well as concrete. What is the preferred, and how that decision is made, on whether it should be concrete or should it go to an asphalt?
Well, we have an option that a private developer can use either or. Mm-hmm. Okay, and both sections are engineered for that particular load. You know, there's asphalt's built differently. Obviously, it's got a base layer, maybe an intermediate layer, and then a surface layer. Around here, most of the streets have been going concrete.
Life cycle comes out better on concrete than asphalt?
You get a longer time before that initial maintenance, but when that maintenance occurs, if you wait too long, you're going to be into this kind of treatment. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at actually, on some concrete streets, we've actually taken 1.5 inches off the top of those and put back a asphalt wearing surface because of the surface cracks and things like that, trying to keep that moisture out of getting into our pavements. We've actually, in the last 2 years, have bought a crack sealer. We're getting aggressive about sealing up our cracks now, trying to seal those up so that we can control that moisture. But this particular, this is like a pavement patch. You can see the intensity of and the disruption it is to have this kind of repair.
You still require flowable fill in the backfit?
We do that. We also allow for an addendum that allows for a compacted pugged in lifts. Because some installations, the flowable fill doesn't work for like a waterline main, like on Texas. They had to put the line in, then they had to go back, dig in the taps. And so in that particular case, we worked with Water and Light, and they're putting in a controlled rock compacted backfill on that.
So the university does too. It's a lot easier to dig it back up again.
It is. The thing with it is you got to make sure, you know, you have some inspection and make sure that it's going in the way it's intended to go in. And obviously the flowable fill is easier because it doesn't require the inspector, but something else requires that inspector. We are getting away from the one-inch clean, and that's no longer allowed. So
the enemy is the moisture, then, more even than wear and tear. Huh?
That's right.
You mentioned that the problem with digging the street up after it's been overlaid. I guess the service line for my house, the water service line is responsible for the water department, isn't it? The water service line?
I'm sorry?
Is the water service line responsible for the water department, the meter?
To the meter, yes.
So under the pavement would be your responsibility?
Yes.
And the gas line would be the gas company's responsibility to the meter?
I think it's the same situation. Yep. Through the meter is the gas company after the meter's over.
The electric line would be the same way to the meter if it's underground electric?
Yes, if it's underground electric.
So sewer is the only one that the property owner is responsible for in the pavement.
The point of the moisture question was it shows the relationship between stormwater and the highways, the roads.
It can, because a failing system, you know, under a road can cause, you know, some of the things that she showed is if that pipe is bringing in the material above it, then that pavement is going to start bridging, if you will, and put stress on it where it's not intended to have.
But the property owner is responsible for the sewer line on the pavement. The sewer line.
Your meter is the tap.
Yeah.
That's what you consider that, Bill. The tap is your meter for sewer.
So the property owner is responsible for the sewer.
That's the tap.
Wherever it is.
Yeah. Wherever it is, it may be up the street, it may not be, it may be across the street.
Do you require the property owner to inspect the sewer line before it overlaid?
If somebody were to put in a new sewer lateral across the street, they would have to compact that sewer lateral, the fill above that.
I'm talking about you require inspection of the sewer lateral before you overlay the street.
No.
Would that be a good idea?
It could be, yeah. It could. But if we found something, the goal is to preserve as much of the street as we can. It may be worthwhile to defer action, but if we lose the rest of the street by deferring action because we found one spot, I don't know the next decision we have to make.
We require a spot to be repaired before you overlay the street.
Yeah, I think it'd be the budget would allow that.
I mean, it'd be the property owner's responsibility, though, wouldn't it?
It would be if it was private, yes.
So we have found that if we hit, this is kind of how we have looked at our funding in lane mile. If we hit this number of $3,400 per lane mile, we have calculated it is enough to touch East Street about once each 10 years on the average. And what we're looking at is an average of all those treatments that I showed you of about $5 per square yard of that maintenance. And we feel if we had a street preservation budget of $4.75 million, we would hit these targets, okay? So we should be spending this per year amount we are currently spending per lane mile in the 2016 budget. So what that means is that some street maintenance is deferred. We either spend less or we do fewer maintenance on those streets. I mean, we're getting close. Like I said, it's a target. It's something that we're going to be working with our budgeting folks with to keep working toward that number. We're slowly climbing. Ultimately, if we get to that number, you know, we may be able to see a reduction. If we get our streets all at sevens, you know, we have had such deferred maintenance over the last, I don't know, several years. prior, you know, as prior to the last 3 years, that we were really behind. So we have had the luxury of having some additional funding to start working to get our pavements in better shape. And so if ultimately we get to that point, then, you know, we may not need to have as high a level if we can continue to do the preservation that we need to be doing. So it's those streets that we've let gone too far that's got us kind of in the hole at this point. Okay.
So the quarter sales tax is funding most of your maintenance. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There is.
Is that climbing, going flat, going down? I mean, is the concern that the sales tax is not going to be able to keep up?
Sales tax is
with the demand.
Yeah, it's, and then we that particular and we. We share that money with transit. We share that with airport. Okay, there are other designated taxes. We get a portion of 15% of MoDOT's 17% sales tax that goes into this budget as well. But there are, and you'll see the numbers, they don't add up. We do other things than street preservation. This is just strictly street preservation. We have a budget that allows us to do our mowing, signal work, our striping, snow removal. So we have a bigger budget, but this is what we feel the street preservation needs. Now, we could move monies away from those other activities, but you're going to start seeing an outcry that we're not taking care of sidewalks, we're not taking care of our striping, we're not taking care of our signals, we're not mowing, we're not street sweeping, and of course our snow removal. So, you know, these are judgment calls that we think to keep our satisfaction of where we need to go. This is how we prioritize our street preservation program. So, like I said, as we keep doing this work, we just kind of have to keep going to that top preservation as much as we can. And that's where we want to be, is we want to keep our good pavements good. And so, we're still underfunded, but like I said, I feel like we're closing that gap. The last 3 years have been very good to the street division in getting additional, say, contracted services and materials, allowing us to put more effort into that as well. So we'll end up making those judgments as best as we can. So to get to that level where we think we could just plateau off, we still need a little more funding and to get us, so we'll move that condition of all the streets up to 7 or better. And so with that, I'd have any questions. This was something we found that people love in Columbia as we continue to do our roundabout design. So. And I know I've taken almost all of the time, and if you want, this is a little different than what was set out to you earlier. I'll get you this one so that you can have it and discard the other one that I mailed out or had emailed out, and then allow you to look that over, and we can talk about it at the next meeting.
Yep. Questions? Things anybody thinks were not covered or they'd like to have covered more in a future time?
Development fees.
Development fees, that goes towards our CIP. It's in the budget.
Yeah.
In the ballot, those budgets, the $63 million that I talked about, that the capital improvements it's going to generate, the total capital program with the public safety is $99.3 million, and that brings in STP money that we get from MoDOT, and that state transportation program, we get $369,000 a year in that. We get a county road rebate that helps supplement that. Right. That's about $2 million, 2.2 in that range. And then development fees is averaging about $1 million a year or something like that.
Yeah, I think I agree with Bill that I'd like to see hear a little more broad presentation about development fees, about how we arrive at them and what they pay for. Next time, maybe a little, you know, not big, but a few minutes.
Sure, it's. I think it's 50 cents per square foot of commercial area.
Yeah. Which
Do you believe that's sufficient? I know it wasn't for, I know we did one at Somerset, or over there by the new high school, that there was a study out there. The city was basing some information on some of studies that were out there that there was a lot more work that needed to be done, and the 50 cents wasn't sufficient to cover that.
Okay, we can...
I'd like to, you know, give the task force a chance to discuss the area of development fees. To what extent are the development fees actually paying for the ramifications of the development?
Well, they go into... they're set up to go and make improvements to collectors and arterials.
I get that. But maybe next time we'll know a little more about that.
Okay.
All right.
I'd be interested in getting historical information on what the quarter cent sales tax has drawn in and revenue that's gone to the district utility. And what if you have a forecast of what it's going to be? I mean, because that's a strong concern. Will the sales tax continue to rise as the community grows, or will internet sales impact that? And will we see it flatten or reduce to where it's going to be a financial constraint going forward?
Is this the capital improvement tax, not the transportation?
Well, the quarter cent sales tax is the one I think you'd mentioned.
Well, we have two. One for capital and...
Well, either both of them, whatever your funding stream is.
Because the same curve.
The same curve. It's a question. Obviously, growth is going to should cause that to go up over time. But, you know, if people are buying more on the internet and we're not collecting that sales tax, then that could be a concern.
I'll see if my financial people have that analysis.
Well, they did get their crystal ball. Yeah. They have more people are asking.
Okay.
Carl.
Should be able to provide
a comment. I don't want to go into it too much, and I'll be at the next meeting if it's necessary. There is a bit of a history to this that goes back to the Prop 2 issue last November, which was about development fees. And we really kind of dug into that as well. But obviously, there's a larger need than there is a supply.
If you're willing, you'd be willing to, I'd like to do it, I don't want to do it twice.
Sure.
So let's do it all next time on development fees.
Sure.
I don't want to plow that ground twice.
Sure.
All right. Anything else about roads that people would like greater expansion on or have questions about?
Well, we were talking about advisory boards before. Streets does not have an advisory board, is that right?
No.
How would the staff feel about having one? Would it be beneficial? Would it not?
From an operations standpoint, we take any input we can get. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that would be structured. But
David, is transportation a utility?
I don't think it is. It's not a user fee.
Right. This is a little different with the roads thing.
It is. It's infrastructure, but not a utility.
Your point was very astute, too, because the stormwater issue is also a function of the streets. They're kind of connected.
Yeah. I was thinking about that.
And transportation, obviously, the streets.
Yeah, it's interesting that it is an infrastructure issue, but not technically a utility
That's
issue.
Right. That's right.
It's an enterprise fund. Airports are
right.
Yeah.
General fund.
Right. Yeah.
You've got dedicated funding, but it's considered general fund.
Okay.
I'll make a comment because from some that's lived here 29 years and maybe a few more people live here longer. You know, I've seen the streets in Columbia go from pretty poor condition, unsafe, to a very good condition. Now, I'm sure we got lots of needs. People see that, but if you've been here a long time, you realize we're a lot better place today, and our roads and thanks to you and your team for making those improvements.
So. Thank you.
You know, I'd like to second that. And I think this is indicative of what we've seen thus far, at least, in infrastructure. The City of Columbia's got lots of really serious infrastructure issues. That's because we're an American city. But as compared to other places, I think you guys are way ahead of the curve, and I think people should appreciate that. Just because we got potholes don't mean that we don't have, comparatively speaking, pretty darn good streets.
Thank you.
I don't want to give any of them big heads. All right, guys, I see us coming back next week or next time and doing this. One, we get answers or we explore these areas of transportation that we just talked about. Two, we flesh out and perhaps finalize we first of all discuss those recommendations or potential recommendations on stormwater.
Kim, myself, and John.
They have not dealt with yet. And then we get the answers from the city about the question we asked them about stormwater recommendations. And we kind of at least tentatively finalize a list of recommendations for stormwater. And everybody like that as an agenda. Anything we need to add to it?
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
We have not reviewed the staff response to the questions from the 10-6-15 task force meeting. We need to take those up.
Okay, let's do that too then. Let's put that as a separate agenda item.
It's dated October the 14th.
Okay, what's our next date?
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, which is the 29th? Is that right? 28th. I'll be an entire year older then. Anything else that we need to discuss before we adjourn? Thank you all very much, and we'll be adjourned.